Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Well, good morning, Jacob's Well. You sound like a friendly bunch. Good. I'm Greg Meyer, and glad to spend this time with you this morning. So, thanks for being here, everybody. And if you're new to Jacob's Well, I don't know. It'll be better next week, you know. Just keep on coming. Give us a chance. No, I want to plow into this new series we're starting called Thanks for a Change. And you'll find on your Sunday paper, if you flip it over, there's an outline there. You're welcome to follow that along. But we're talking about some good stuff. Thanksgiving is what? Just a couple weeks away. And my guess is a lot of our thoughts are kind of going around giving thanks. Actually, our thoughts really going around what we're going to make for Thanksgiving dinner and who we're going to invite and who we have to be with. But I do find it a little strange that we spend this one holiday that's really focused on giving thanks, stuffing ourselves as much as we possibly can, and then going shopping. But that isn't true about all of us. I mean, some of us stuff ourselves and then watch football. No, truly, it is kind of neat. There are some new trends happening around all that, and that's kind of good. But that isn't what I want to talk about today, right? We're not beating ourselves up about thanks. I just think there's some really core and important stuff to talk about. I want to talk about this thanking business because I think it's really, really important. In fact, it is one of the major themes in the Bible. It talked about, and the word, that thanks, thankfulness, gratitude, all those similar words are one of the most common words you're going to find in the Bible. And I'll just make the stretch without justifying too much, but I think you probably won't disagree with me too much, that it's not only a big issue in the Bible, I would say it's one of the most important issues with God. And I think maybe you'll start to see why when we talk about this. But as we dive into this idea about thanks, we've got to clear the air on a couple of things right away. And the first is this, that, and you'll find this on your outline, God doesn't want you to be grateful so that you will be more polite, all right? It isn't about etiquette. It's not about manners. It's not about being nice, all right? Should it be that way? I mean, that social lubrication aspect of being thankful is a real thing. I mean, I'm not discouraging you for being thankful just for its own sake. I mean, it's a good thing, but that is not what it's about. That isn't why I think it's so important. That's not why I think you should think it's so important. I don't think that's why God thinks it's so important. The other thing is that God doesn't want you to be grateful because God suffers from low self-esteem. All right? I mean, just let's get that out of the way. I mean, all this, God, we're supposed to praise God. We're supposed to thank God and stuff. We aren't doing that because, God's feelings might get hurt if we don't. I mean, it's like if you're catch and release fishing, and you catch the fish and then you take it off the barbless hook and you let it go back in the water and what? It just swam away and didn't say thank you? I mean, really? Do you get upset about that? I mean, God isn't worried about that. God is too big. And the reason I think that, and I believe that there is something else going on here about gratitude that is so important is this. God wants us to be grateful because God wants you to be grateful because it changes you. It changes you. Being grateful makes something happen within us. Gratitude isn't just saying thank you. It is a different orientation between yourself and the giver of the gift. It means that there's something fundamentally different in the relationship. Gratitude is transformational. It's one of those strange powers in our universe that doesn't actually exist, but changes everything. It shapes us. I think it makes us be more the people that God would hope we could possibly be. And it isn't because it makes us better people. It's because it makes us different people. Fuller, more connected, more woven into that world that God created us to exist in. And I think when we begin to experience gratitude, when we begin to express it with our lives, our feet kind of and our toes wriggle down deeper and deeper into that fabric of existence that is beyond some of our comprehension, beyond what is obvious to our eyes, beyond what we can easily prove. And we start feeling that connectedness. We start finding how we are a part of things that before maybe we weren't so sure about. So I hope that as we are exploring this over these next couple weeks, that you will find that this is more than some interesting ideas for yourself. But you're going to find that we are talking about stuff that really has to do with some of the things that are at the heart of you. And there's something changing. There is something that actually could use some changing within each and every one of us. Between us and God, between us and each other, and us, between us and the world, the bigger world around us. And when we experience this Thanksgiving stuff, it starts making us a little bit more like God envisions that thankfulness stirring up within us. So as we launch into this, I'd like to take a moment to stop and to open ourselves to what God might be doing to this month through spending a lot of time thinking about maybe practicing gratitude. You could call this a prayer, but it isn't a prayer with words. I'd like to kind of hold on to what we did through this Shh series over the last month and of quieting ourselves. And so just be comfortable. If you've got pens, paper in your hand, just set them down on your lap or beside you or something like that, okay? Put your feet flat on the floor. You can close your eyes, you can keep them open, and just, you know, shake your shoulders out a little bit if you need to, your neck. Just be comfortable. Be here. Let all that stuff that you've been doing this morning that kept you so busy and made it so hard to get here on time and do it without friction, just let that all melt away and put your palms, your hands on your lap, palms up, as if you are expecting them to be filled with something really precious. And I want us just to be thankful. This isn't about evaluating how much you have or haven't been. I mean, we all know that gratitude doesn't have the hold on our lives we like it to be. We know about the gulf between ourselves and others. We know about this world that we live off of the goodness of it and we really don't give back or care for it the way we should. We are all aware about the hopes and dreams God has for us that we seem to just forget and walk away from. We even know the truths and the hopes and the dreams we have for ourselves that we don't care for. But let that just be there as an acknowledgement. God knows it. God doesn't judge you for it. God loves you because of it, despite it. God just loves you. And right now you're here in this moment. And it is a good place to be. So breathe in this moment and give thanks for it. And give thanks for each day, for each person, for each situation. And breathe. Okay, still with me? Well, you can open your eyes, and I hope that gave you a little sanity there. Jenna gets to hold a baby, that's not fair. I could do anything holding a baby. So, the Bible is full of stories about gratitude, and we're going to be exploring different ones every week, and I want to dive into one today. That takes on this idea of gratitude, thankfulness, thanksgiving deeply. And it does it. It's one of these primordial stories, these prehistory stories from the Judeo-Christian tradition that we come from. It comes all the way back from the book of Exodus, right? Second book in the Bible. And I'll just kind of fill you in on it. It's the story of Moses, but it's really, in this case, what I want to focus on is the story of Miriam. Miriam was Moses' sister, all right? Miriam was the older sister that, if take you back, all right? So Israel goes to Egypt in the time when Joseph went to Egypt and became powerful there. And Israel goes there because they're escaping a famine and they can be protected by Joseph. And they end up being there for 400 years, and they end up being there so long that they start almost forgetting who they are as a people. They start losing their identity, And the Egyptians are starting to be worried because they are becoming so numerous that they're a threat to the Egyptians. And so the Pharaoh enslaves them and makes life very, very difficult for them. And in fact, decides that that all male children born to Israelites should be killed to try to decrease their numbers. And that's when Moses gets born, and they don't want him to die. So Moses' mother and Miriam have this plan. They put him in a basket and put him out in the Nile River in the bulrushes, and Miriam watches. And the queen happens to come down to bathe and sees the baby there and takes him in. But Miriam runs out and gets the baby out of the water to give to the queen, and the queen can't nurse the baby herself. So Miriam says, "I'll go find someone." She goes, gets her own mother, hers and Moses' mother, to care for the baby. And Moses grows up in the Pharaoh's court as an Egyptian. And long, long story. I'm going to jump all the way to the end. You can read the book of Exodus. In fact, your SOAP readings kind of cover a lot of this stuff this week. You can do that. It's on the back of your Sunday paper. And so, Vance, a long story. Moses now is leading the Israelite people into freedom out of Egypt. All right, I'll bypass all those details. And they leave. They're escaping Egypt. And they're going, and I don't know, did Moses like not have a map, or did he forget to ask for directions? But he runs them into the Red Sea. So they're at a dead end. That's problem number one. Problem number two is the Pharaoh changes his mind about letting them go and sends the army after him to go get him, kill him. We don't know. And so this is a bad situation. Well, again, I want to focus on Miriam. The sea parts. Israel walks across, the Egyptians follow. When the Israelites are all on the other side, the waters come back, all the Egyptian soldiers are drowned, and Israel makes it across, the people of Israel make it across free. And at that point, there are two short verses, and they're printed on your outline, they'll be on the screen here, where Miriam sings a song. It says this: "Then the prophet Miriam, Aaron's sister," Moses' sister as well, "took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and with dancing. And Miriam sang to them, 'Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. Horse and rider he has thrown into the sea.'" Now, it's a party going on. I mean, they made it. They're finally safe after all. I mean, 400 years and an enormous drama. They're finally safe. And this is a song of thanks. But it comes with a problem. I mean, if you hear that like I do, it's like, great, I'm glad you made it. But what about all these Egyptians? I mean, what about all the people that died, were drowned? And remember, they didn't just like drown, but God did it. I mean, God, our all-loving God, who is supposed to care about all people, you know, with no partiality, drowned them so these guys could make it. He didn't just stop them, he drowned them. So before we go into and understand the gratitude, I think we're just going to take a moment on some Bible notes. Like, how do you deal with a story like that? And I think it's really important for us to realize that, one, this is a really, really old story. This is an ancient story. It comes from a time in a world where things are very different, and people experience reality, and their culture was very, very different than ours. And we need to realize that this dog-eat-dog time in history, this kind of a battle and this kind of scenario kind of was fairly familiar. It didn't raise some of the issues and the problems that it does for us today. So the first note here is, and I say this quite often, but I think it's really important for us to important to repeat it, don't confuse the vehicle with the cargo. The vehicle is the story, the kind of story, the kind of literature that is used to convey something. The cargo is a message. The cargo is what we are supposed to learn, what we're supposed to take away from this story, okay? Now, the vehicle is one that we're not real comfortable with. In that day and age, it didn't really create some of the same problems it does for us, all right? So the vehicle isn't that important. What's really important is the message that it's trying to bring across. And so kind of following along with that, this is the next thing on your outline. Don't expect this story to fit your sense of science, of history, or of morality. This is over 3,000 years old, folks. The science, the parting of the waters, And, you know, how could people physically do this? That many people march through the wilderness and stuff like that. Historically, you know, there's all kinds of accounts. There's little tidbits that really happened. And what and were the Israelites really a nation? There's all kinds of things that are questionable and all that. And then morality, this idea of all these people dying and so on. Just don't expect it to. Frankly, our sense of science, history, and morality wouldn't work if you look back at a story from the mid-1800s, let alone from 3,000 years ago. All right? So you got to just sort of accept that some of those things are going to be a little problem. Let go of the vehicle. Look for the cargo. All right? Even the Jewish people long, long ago had problems with the story and the morality of it. In fact, the Seder, which is the Passover meal that Jewish people celebrate, and a big part of it is about the deliverance from the Egyptians on the Exodus, there is a little piece that was inserted there long, long ago by a rabbi that has God saying, and this is, you know, a midrashic kind of addition to the Bible, when all the heavenly hosts start rejoicing because the Egyptians were drowning in the sea, God says, "Silence," to the heavenly host. "Would you rejoice when my creatures are dying?" So even long, long ago, the Jewish people knew that there's some tension there. But the point is, what is the point? What is the story really trying to tell us? And there's a lot of wisdom in this Bible when we can go across these thousands of years. But this is the last fill-in here on a little Bible notes, and I'll get back to what we're really talking about today. And that is, to get wisdom from the Bible, you have to deal with the crap from the Bible. All right? I mean, there's just no better way to say that. There's a lot of stuff in the Bible that, you know, if you just take it, if the vehicle is that important, and the vehicle is the thing, all right, so to get the wisdom out of the Bible, you got to deal with the crap of the Bible. In most cases, this crap has to do with contextualizing, you know, with cultural context from long, long ago in a different world, different people, right? So there's no reason to think that they would have written the Bible to match our 21st century ideas of how things go. So just let that go. All right, so if Miriam's song isn't about miracles and the vanquishing of Israel's enemies by a powerful God, then what was it about? It wasn't about science, it wasn't about history, it wasn't about morality. So what is the teaching? And I want to say that the value of this story isn't about the past, and it isn't about that nation. It's about the present, and it is about us as individuals, and it has been that way all along. And so let's think about this from a little bigger perspective. Let's step back from that vehicle and sort of see what is going on here. You've got these people that are trying to follow God. These people that have hopes and dreams for themselves. But they are in captivity. Israel's in captivity. They're living under oppression. They're forgetting who they are because of their bondage. And then they get to go free. They escape. But there's a difference between escaping and being free. And they really weren't free yet. They were still in danger. They were still on a leash. Their captors hadn't given up that easily, and they were about to destroy them. And then what? And then they passed through the waters. Metaphor by any chance? Saying something bigger than crossing the Red Sea? They passed through the waters, and they get to the other side, and then they see the waters close, swallowing their past, their baggage, their oppression, everything that wants to make them less than who they are, less than what God hopes they could be, and it is gone. It is over. It is done. The sea closed behind them represents their freedom from the past. They're free from the past. And then they see that happen, and they realize that, and then they turn around, and what do they see? They turn around and they see the wilderness before them. Wilderness? Were you here for Godflix when we did Into the Woods? If you want to know what wilderness means in the Old Testament mind, go back and listen to that podcast. The wilderness before them. So the wilderness is their opportunity. The wilderness open before them represents possibility for their future. a present to be thankful for, and a future in which they can be free to choose a life for themselves. And they celebrated and they thanked God. They turned their hearts towards the giver because they knew that connection wasn't something that just got them out of a fix, but it was something that was going to be required for them to make the future they were called to. That is what this story tells us about the ancient people of Israel, and that is what this story is telling us about our lives today, and that is why this story survived so many generations. It isn't because it was so marvelous and such a wild story. I could come up with a more wild story if you gave me a little time. It is because it told them something that they knew they needed their children to learn and their children's children to learn, and it made all the difference for them. It was about transformation. So Miriam's song was gratitude, not for so many deaths, but for a possibility. She or they could say, "Whew, that was close." And then, in fact, that is what kind of happens over and over in the wilderness, as some of them aren't quite so directed towards the giver of the gift. Or she and they could turn to the giver of the gift and say, as they did in this story, "Wow, you did that for a reason. You weren't just getting us out of a fix. You turned us into brand new people today." Gratitude does that. Gratitude changes our orientation from just getting out of something to realizing that there's a possibility. So the sea behind you, right? Let's leave Miriam. Let's leave Israel behind. Let's talk about us. The sea behind you and the future before you is each morning when you wake up. Yesterday is behind you. A new day is ahead of you. The possibility exists. It is the possibility that exists when you get beat so horribly in that tennis match. But the person you're playing against says, "Want to play again?" It's when you blew it as a parent and you did and said everything you always vowed you would never say and do. But you take a couple deep breaths and you walk back in the room and you parent again. It's when you return to that task you have been doing so long. And it's when you go back to work one more day. And it's a new day. It's not controlled by yesterday. Informed, maybe, but it is a new day. Miriam's song is a response that looks forward, not back. And it's not because of what she sang about. It's because it was focused on the giver of the gift. It is centered in gratitude. It connects the giver of the gift. It finds joy in the partnership that the future could be made from. And this is the difference between the person within you who faces what's next and says, "Not again," and the person within you who looks at what's next and says, "Yes, again." You've likely heard the Bible verse, "Give thanks in all circumstances," and you probably chafed at it. Seriously? But it doesn't say give thanks for all circumstances. Nobody should ever expect you to be thankful for all circumstances. God doesn't want you to be thankful for pain, for sickness, for suffering, for hurt, for loss, for any of that sort of stuff. But what God does want us and hope for us to do is to be able to reach into those circumstances and see the possibility. In all circumstances is very different. God is asking you to reach into the possibility in each moment, to stand on the shores of the future with the past sealed behind you, seeing what is and what can be. Now, you can't and shouldn't be thankful for all circumstances, but you can be thankful in all circumstances, and this is the key. You can be thankful in all circumstances because it is a gift. Life is a gift, and it is always a gift. God created you for these possibilities, not to be trapped by yesterday's mistakes or accidents or injuries. But being thankful can bring us to the moment that is, the moment that is a gift. I don't know about you, but I just worry too much about how things are going. I've got all these plans and all these ideas. I evaluate and I decide how happy I am by how well it's all pulling off. And I forget that I'm alive. Well, I'm worried about that. As I was talking to a friend the other day who just discovered he has a multiple myeloma. Thank you. Very good. How did you all know? Did you talk to him too? And I said, I'm really, really sorry. And he says, you know, Greg, I woke up this morning and I fogged the mirrors with my breath. It's a good day. You know? That's where it is. That's where it comes from. So see those things. See this world of beauty, this world of full of life, a world full of possibility. See these things. Be thankful for them. Thankfulness binds you to them. And it makes you a part of something that can free you from the stuff that is behind you. I believe that the change that God hopes will take place in me and take place in you has less to do with your accomplishments, has less to do with how good you are, and has more to do with how present you are and how present I am. How well we experience the possibility, the potential of every moment. I also believe, and you see this diagram, it's on your Sunday papers as well. I really think it's true that seeing life as a gift helps us be grateful. And being grateful helps us to be in the moment, to be present. And be present helps us to see life as a gift. And it goes on and on and on, and it changes us in powerful, wonderful ways, and we begin to change others as well. As a closing, I want us to experience something together, but before we do that, because I don't want to kill a little bit later, I just want to say, talk about the offering, right? The offering baskets, I think they're on the outside. You can pass them in, but don't do it now, all right? All right, I just don't want to talk about it later. So in about 5 minutes, when this little, I'll call it a communion experience, happens, after that, you can pass those and put your communication cards in there. We thank you for supporting us in whatever ways you do. So just file that and forget about it now, right? And you'll know to do it in a couple of minutes. But I want you to experience something. There's a man named Louis Schwartzberg. He's a cinematographer. He doesn't make movies, you know, Hollywood movies. He films nature. He films people. And he does it because of the joy that he finds in it. And he wants to share with other people. And he made this gift for us together with the words of a Benedictine monk. It's brother David Rendell Rast. Just an amazing man. It's his words in the background and some music. And I want us just kind of, again, quiet yourself and just experience this as you watch it. And take those breaths and just be grateful. And I'm going to say we're going to have communion during this. Now, there are no tables around the room like we normally have. There's no bread. There's no wine. It's because the words of Brother David are the words of Christ. The scenery, the people, the places, the stuff that we see is the bread that you will feed on. And the sounds in the background is the wine that is the life coursing through our world, through our lives, through this experience. So take a deep breath and be present to life as a gift and be grateful. Be changed.
You think this is just another day in your life? It's not just another day. It's the one day that is given to you today. It's given to you. It's a gift. It's the only gift that you have right now, and the only appropriate response is gratefulness. If you do nothing else but to cultivate that response to the great gift that this unique day is, if you learn to respond as if it were the first day in your life and the very last day, then you will have spent this day very well. Begin by opening your eyes and be surprised that you have eyes you can open. That incredible array of colors that is constantly offered to us for pure enjoyment. Look at the sky. We so rarely look at the sky. We so rarely note how different it is from moment to moment with clouds coming and going. We just think of the weather. And even of the weather, we don't think of all the many nuances of weather. We just think of good weather and bad weather. This day, right now, has unique weather. Maybe a kind that will never exactly in that form come again. The formation of clouds in the sky will never be the same that is right now. Open your eyes, look at that. Look at the faces of people whom you meet. Each one has an incredible story behind their face. A story that you could never fully fathom. Not only their own story, but the story of their ancestors. We all go back so far. And in this present moment, on this day, all the people you meet, all that life from generations and from so many places all over the world, flows together and meets you here like a life-giving water if you only open your heart and drink. Open your heart to the incredible gifts that civilization gives to us. You flip a switch and there is electric light. You turn a faucet and there is warm water and cold water and drinkable water. It's a gift that millions and millions in the world will never experience. So these are just a few of an enormous number of gifts to which we can open your heart. And so I wish you that you will open your heart to all these blessings and let them flow through you, that everyone whom you will meet on this day will be blessed by you. Just by your eyes, by your smile, by your touch, just by your presence. Let the gratefulness overflow into blessing all around you. And then it will really be a good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for being on this journey of gratitude with me this month. May it be a blessing to you, and may you be a blessing to others because of it. Amen.